Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yes, sir. We wear caps and sleeves at this level, son. Understood?
Hey there, welcome to the California Penal League podcast, spring training edition. And if you are like us, you've been maybe foaming at the mouth a little bit at some of these early returns that we're getting from some young talent in the Cleveland Guardians organization, major league roster and otherwise. And we're going to talk about it. So here we are, boys. We are like a whopping 14, 15 at bats into spring training.
Yeah.
And
enough to make solid, sound judgments, I think. Across
yes,
the board.
Like very totally reasonable rational predictions.
I don't see how this could backfire at all.
Yeah, that's kind of my whole, that's sort of my whole idea here is, as exciting, as cool as it is, right, to see Chase DeLauder hit like a 468-foot home run, I take such little stock in spring training that I don't even, it doesn't even register to me. I think we've talked about this before, maybe. I hardly pay attention to spring training, to be honest. I don't even care because it means so little. And I've even tried to find like, there have been like MIT papers published about whether or not spring training stats matter and how they translate. And the best they could come up with is sort of, kind of, not really, depends on how you look at it. And so like the what I've heard and read from these like studies is that like, well, since it's just a small sample size, the only thing that really matters is like, you know, walk and strikeout ratios, that all sort of averages out real quick. And so like, that's more indicative, blah, blah, blah. But everything else is sort of a crapshoot. And
so what they're saying is we should pull the ripcord on the Estevan Florial experiment because he has eight strikeouts in 16 plate appearances.
Right. Well, exactly.
Our good buddy Gabriel Arias has 4 and 11 at bats.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and I mean, we'll dive into each of those further here shortly. The way I always look at it is a little bit, maybe not as academic, but I look at the guys who are like literally like the extremes, like the guys who are tearing it up and the guys who are like struggling. And yep. I feel like that also kind of is a good indication too. Like, and I love, I want to say this too, because I put these in the notes for us, but the, like the opponent's like level of competition that, Baseball Reference posts, I think is really telling too, because like Chase DeLauder so far tearing it up by all accounts, but he's kind of facing like double A like competition.
Well, that,
or no, I'm sorry, Kyle Manzardo. I'm sorry. Kyle Manzardo has been like tearing up like double A competition. Chase DeLauder is facing a little bit higher competition, almost triple A level competition, and he's also tearing it up. So like on the one hand, it's like, okay, Chase DeLauder, what he's doing is definitely sustainable. Manzardo, I'm like, he's tearing it up, don't get me wrong, but it's like, guys, he should be tearing it up against.
I've always looked at spring training is, if it supports what I want to happen, then it's accurate.
It's good.
And if it's a fluke, if otherwise, Straw is hitting 450, that's a total fluke.
Hey, you guys want to know who was the Guardians' best hitter in 2023 spring training?
2023.
I bet they were ass during the regular season.
Yeah, I bet they probably were terrible.
It was our good friend who you just mentioned there, Fabs, Mr. Miles Straw.
There you go. Oh.
He hit 364 in spring of last year.
How many at-bats?
33 at-bats.
33 at-bats.
And then followed that up with Gabriel Arias. Literally a
week's worth of games.
Yep, Gabriel Arias hit 341. And then Jose had a pretty monster spring last year. And then, you know, guys like Naylor and Kwan did pretty well. And then it gets into just like bizarre weirdo stuff where you're like, I don't even know this one guy's name. But yeah, it's actually, you're like kind of dead on there though, Fabs. It's like, especially when I'm thinking about fantasy baseball, if a guy gets like his ass rocked in a start in fantasy, for my fantasy team, I'm like, oh no. But then like Chase DeLauder hits a home run and I'm like, when can I get him?
Yeah, baby. Like, when starting center fielder.
it's vicious though, because like baseball, as we all know and talk about all the time, it's a sport that's so not built for small sample sizes that Angel Martinez is having like the best week of his life.
Angel Martinez is like the second coming of Babe Ruth this week.
But the problem with him is that unless he's going to break out, because he's only 22, and that's entirely possible. But there's nothing that would necessarily suggest, other than the pop, that he could sustain like a 300 batting average. He's like a 260 hitter. But he can hit 20 homers if he had full season at bats. So like, that's great. Perfect. I would take it. But I don't. It's like, and it's the same with DeLauder, where we were just talking about this before we hopped on, that Jeff Passan had an article about, like, you know, oh, DeLauder, you don't be surprised if DeLauder's the opening day right fielder. And it's like, do you not know what team you're talking about here? Yeah.
You're talking about the team that's going to wait until he's like 27 years old before they promote him. I would
be so locked in every single day if Martinez is at second for somehow, and Jimenez at short. Oh my God. Like, that talk about the 4D chess.
I mean, talk about the 4D chess move that would be though, Fabs, because like
that would
be. Everybody like has said, F this team, they didn't do anything this offseason. They were like, oh yeah, well guess what? We're going to make the first round pick our starting right fielder. And we're going to let it go. We'll let it ride.
Right.
A part of me would love that so
much. Yeah, because if you're doing that, then short of signing, you know, which was never going to happen, short of that.
Time out. Before we talk about free agent signings, you want to talk about 4D chess. I have a 4D chess move. Okay. I have to interject here. I'm sorry. There's going to be a little over $30 million coming off the books potentially next year. Okay. Now, It's not going to be a full $30 million once arbitration happens, maybe any extensions happen. But still, if we want to keep pace with this year's payroll, there's one name out there who's a free agent next offseason that the Guardians go out and sign. Maybe it's for 5-6 years. Maybe it's for a decade. But the Guardians are going to be in on the Juan Soto sweepstakes, my friends.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
You heard it here first.
Can you imagine a
Soto? You heard it here first.
Soto, yeah. Glauder, Juan outfield.
Oh, my gosh. I wish I was serious. I truly wish I was serious with this line of thinking. It is a complete and utter joke that I am throwing out that Juan Soto is on the radar. No, I'm sure at some point somebody will link us to Soto, but it's going to be like literally like down the line. Every team's going to be linked to Soto in some capacity. Right. They're foolish not to. Dude's going to be 26 years old next season. He's playing this year, you know, this is his age 25 season. I think he turns 26 in like September or something like that.
Yeah, in a down year, he hits, you know,
yeah,
30 home runs.
Yeah, and like, who wouldn't add that to their team? But no, to your point, like, yeah, adding DeLauder and Martinez or Brito, I mean, even, you know, kind of,
I mean, that's
shaking
more
it
than-
up there.
That's better than, so like, if you add two young guys and they're going to get legit playing time, to me, that's better than signing a free agent or two, short of like a crazy one, because it's you're trying to upgrade the team and it's showing that you're in like a win now mode, which I mean, I don't really know, like, other than the payroll, I don't know how you could say like we shouldn't be in a win now mode with the pitching staff.
Yeah.
Jose's age and Naylor's pending free agency. Like, I don't even know. Like, yeah, I just don't know how you could argue that we shouldn't be in win now mode.
You can even lump on there too. You know, guys like Kwan and Jimenez, Bo Naylor, kind of coming into their own too.
Yeah.
You know, kind of starting that, those early years of their prime right now. No, you're 100% right. And the division is trash. Let's put that out there too.
Really?
Like, the division is trash. Too,
I think the other X factor in all that is, I wonder if they're willing to consider the notion now with Tito being gone.
I was going to bring that up with Miles Straw, actually. Weirdly enough, as anti-Miles Straw as I've been, I was going to make the point, but our conversation led away from this, that I'm very curious to see the strategy in which Voit goes with using some of these guys, where if he's willing to play young guys more with the blessing of ownership, GM, and get a little bit more creative than we have been the last, you know, I love Tito as much as the next guy, but if you weren't one of Tito's guys, or if you were a young guy, good luck getting like significant opportunities to be successful.
I agree with that. I agree with that. If we're going to touch on Straw for a second, I think we're stuck with him for another year, quite frankly. I think trading him with $13 million in 2 years is a much more stomachable proposition than trading him with 3 years and $19 million, especially if we can limit him to a significantly lesser role that he can potentially excel in. Hypothetically speaking, the way I envision center field panning out is Florial and Valera get cracks 1 and 2 at that spot this year.
Valera?
And yeah. Yeah. Because everything I've been reading, you know, prospect wise, is Valera is like a center fielder. They don't see him as a
Is he going to be healthy, though? That's the big question.
Well, I think that's where you have to give Florial a long leash, probably until June.
I mean, I don't think you have to. What if Tyler Freeman just does nothing but hit?
Tyler Freeman's the X factor in all of this. Because that's something I want
to... What if Angel Martinez doesn't do anything but hit?
That's another X factor. But I think you have to...
They don't
know
Florial anything.
They don't... No. No, and I think they can cut bait with him pretty quickly. If his April and May are garbage, I could see them moving on from him pre-All-Star break. 100%.
The good thing is... Whoever plays center, as long as they hit above 150, it's you're doing an offensive better. Upgrade.
You're doing better than Miles Straw.
So that's
it's a very low bar. It's a very, very low bar. I think that's the point I'm trying to get at is anything that we can discover internally between Florial, Villara, Freeman, potentially like a Martinez or a Brito switching positions, is gravy. And then I think next offseason, or maybe even this trade deadline, if Straw in his limited time has shown an ability to be a great pinch runner, to be a good defensive replacement, like, I mean, some of the games is so far this spring training, he's flashed the leather. Like, he looks like he was two, 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe less playing time kind of actually boosts his value again. I don't know. I'm just speculating. I'm just holding out hope for the best case scenario with him.
Was Freeman the one who was saying a couple of days ago that they've like organizationally changed their approach at the plate now to
target more pop? I know Kwan had come out and said some stuff like that, like where he literally was standing in a cage and like taking like pitches, just like learning how to take pitches and not like be so aggressive. I know Kwan had mentioned that. I hadn't heard anything from anybody else, but I mean,
well, I know Freeman, his big approach has been he's trying to drive the ball more.
Yeah.
Like it's not like he'll sacrifice. I mean, I mentioned that stat in passing that I saw that shocked me that he was one of the better like pure line drive hitters last year. And he's trying to lean into that more and get more pop as opposed to being like a slap hitter this year. So like selling out probably a little bit more.
Yeah. I think the whole philosophy has changed to like, hey, it's okay to strike out a little bit more if you're driving the ball better.
Yeah, we need some home runs. Like, we don't necessarily need a bunch of 300 hitters, but we'll take a bunch of 270 to 280
hitters for sure.
Hitting 20 to 25 home runs.
Yeah, man. I'm just asking, be like, I'm not asking to be top 10 in home runs. I would love it if we were, you know,
maybe top 20, right now, man. I'll take it.
Yeah, I love it.
That's what I was going to say. If we could be 15 to 22 in the healthy pitching staff, that's a recipe to win the division.
100%. 100%. I mean, I hate to say it, but your only real competition is the Twins.
True.
I'm feeling the Tigers a little bit.
Tigers, if everything clicks, I think the Tigers really have to.
I actually feel the same way about the Royals. If the Royals stay healthy, they've got the right mix of young and veteran talent.
I forget who it was, but there was a scout for The Athletic, or in this article, they were kind of like recapping like all of the Royals moves, and they're like, those are great moves if you're like a 500 ball club. Because all of those guys get you like an extra win or two.
Sounds like a AL Central title to me.
And then, but for the Royals, who had 50 wins last year, they're like, you're talking about going from 50 wins to like 60 wins.
Mm.
And I was like,
I don't agree with that.
I don't know why that stuck with me, but like it did. And again, this was like,
I don't know, man. Like, they got a good lineup.
It's better.
Their biggest problem is still going to be, dude, it's a better lineup than the Guardians. I would take their lineup over ours.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right now.
They have pieces that I would definitely take over ours for sure, but top to bottom, I don't know.
I would. I definitely would. Not the pitching staff. As much as I like Cole Reagans,
the pitching staff is garbage. The pitching staff for them is garbage, 100%. And that's what the scout also said, is like, there's nobody in that rotation that you can count on.
They also have like the worst farm system in baseball.
Yeah. And the bullpen's not good.
So that's not going to help. If they start to like lose some guys, it's going to be over.
Yeah,
you're going to need a combination of like regression from like several teams, injuries for several teams, and you need to stay perfectly healthy.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
The Tigers have way more leeway, I would argue.
Yeah.
But I mean, the team best poised, I would say. I mean, we'll get more into that, but like, I mean,
best poised for what?
Though? I mean, you could probably make
poised to win the division overall.
You can make a pretty good case between either the Twins or the Guardians at this point.
I think those are your top two.
Hard to bet against the Twins, but again, you're asking them.
They lost some notable arms in that rotation, man.
And until I see full seasons from Byron Buxton and Royce Lewis.
Exactly.
I'm not going to be convinced.
Exactly.
So it's the same old with them.
I'm excited for a new manager. I don't know. He might be terrible.
There could definitely be learning curves this year. And I think that's to be expected. I think that's like the one thing that like, admittedly, even myself, I'm just overlooking, like, I'm just coming into this, like, oh, Steven Vogt's going to, like, just get it from day one. No. Like, I need to, like, reset that expectation, probably.
They say, I mean, every article about him is so glowing.
It is.
And how much people, every player loves him. So it's like,
I think there's going to be
I hope, like, opening day, he's drunker than Tom Hanks in A League of Their Own. And we're just I'm hoping, oh, shit.
I'm hoping he does,
or he just, like, completely fucks up. Like, he, like, his pants fall down, putting in the lineup, giving the lineup to the umpire.
His pants
like,
fall down, he stares directly, like hits.
He stares directly into the eclipse. Just starts
shitting.
he goes blind.
Yeah, he goes blind like, on opening day.
He has like David Fry start opening day for some reason, like as the opening day pitcher. It's like what's happening?
Oh,
as a pitcher.
Oh. Yeah, he doesn't know how to do it. Oh, is the opening day catcher? It's like no. Like mark my words. Like that's gonna happen. Like David Fry is gonna be the opening day catcher. Like Naylor's gonna be like,
well, that's
the DH. Like that will happening.
That's why I'm saying
Guardians opening day. Like, by the way, the lineups,
chill.
The early season lineups, I think are gonna be nasty. Until like,
well, that's what I'm saying is like everybody gets like excited about the possibility of Chase DeLauder. You're gonna be looking at some.
You're gonna
gross
be looking at David Fry
for a couple weeks.
Josh Naylor, De Los Santos, like rotating through that DH spot. Esteban Florial, like it's going to be kind of nasty. Like opening day roster.
Speaking of nasty,
be the same All-Star game.
The fun stat that I saw was that for 12 consecutive seasons, the Guardians have had a different opening day right fielder.
Yeah, I sent that to you.
Gee.
I sent that to you, buddy.
I think I sent that to you. Was it you sent it to me?
I sent that to you.
That seems almost impossible to do.
Well, yeah, I went and looked up who they were.
Yeah, that's the real nastiness. You want to just throw up in your mouth a little bit. Go ahead. Read those names off.
Let me just ask you this right off the bat. Do you guys think if I gave you 1,000 guesses, you could guess who the right fielder was opening day of 2015?
Chisenhall.
Or even 2016.
Chisenhall.
I know some sickos out there definitely are going to get it.
I know that 2016, the whole thing with that team And what we would tell ourselves, like, in the bad years after that, was like, well, that opening day lineup was so different from what ended up happening.
Oh, yeah, playoffs. It was. Marlon Byrd.
Yeah. No, but that's a good guess. Colin Cowgill. So here, I'll give you the rundown here. 2012 was Shin Soo-Chiu.
Yeah.
2013 was Drew Stubbs, which was
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one.
2014 was David Murphy. 2015 was Brandon Moss.
Yeah.
2016 was Colin Cowgill. 2017 was Abraham Almonte, if you remember him.
Dude, I do remember him. He had a moonshot over my head in my season tickets the one year. And I was convinced after that home run that this dude was going to be something. Now, I didn't run out and get a jersey or any rookie cards or anything like that. But I was convinced, like, that dude had a future to some degree.
It was the roids.
It was. Yeah. It was.
And then it starts to get in the names you recognize. So Lonnie Chisenhall in 2018, Tyler Naquin 2019, Domingo Santana in 2020.
Yeah.
Josh Naylor 21, Stephen Kwan in 22, and Will Brennan in 23.
So there's a chance the
curse could be broken.
It could be broken this year if Will Brennan starts opening day.
Yeah, who do they they open in
where? In Oakland.
They have Oakland in Seattle.
Yeah.
Wonder who the opening day Oakland starter would be. Couldn't it be JP Sears? Because he's a lefty.
Yeah. So then we're going to tack on another one.
13, baby.
Oh my gosh. I have a good Oakland story. Somebody I work with, we were just talking baseball, and he's a contractor, and he is friends with the president of baseball operations for Oakland.
Whoa, and, that's sweet.
Yeah.
What intel has he given you about their move?
We were talking about the move because we were talking about Vegas. And basically, like, they were trying to get something done where they could move further east. So they knew they couldn't move deep into actual Oakland because no fans were going to come and see it. And like, because downtown Oakland isn't like the best, and just from a accessibility, not super accessible. But they couldn't move to where they wanted to because the TV rights, I guess, are super weird up there.
Yeah,
and only Giants games would be broadcast, so they couldn't even have a TV deal to broadcast locally for where they had the possibility to get a land deal that was going to be cheap enough for them to actually get it done. So their only other option was in San Jose, and the owners didn't want to do San Jose.
Oh, the owners didn't want to do that. Yeah.
They didn't want to do the San Jose thing.
There was that stadium that they had rendered for San Jose years ago, like 10 years ago. Cisco Field or whatever it was going to be called.
That was beautiful. That was one of the other options, but yeah, so it just didn't work out.
How convinced is he that they're actually going to move to Vegas? Is it like slam dunk?
Yeah, isn't it like starting to like fall apart a little bit?
It is. It is falling. There's cracks. I'll put it that way. There's cracks.
He was the only other thing I got from him was that where are they playing? They're playing in like a AAA park next year or something.
Potentially. It's not. I don't think it's finalized yet.
So that's the immediate, like, they're trying to sort that out because I think they're past the, like, we have any options in the Oakland Bay Area.
Yeah.
Which is, it's so interesting to me because listen, if an owner never wants to pay a cent, it just makes things like so complicated for you. But that area is so, because my wife's family lives up there. That area is so massive. There's so many suburbs, and the BART line runs through all the suburbs. You could do a freaking, Auburn Hills style where you're, 30, 40 miles away from Oakland and you're more near Central California, still call it Oakland, get a much cheaper land deal, and then you can have, you know, yuppie suburbanites come to your games. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that's not like, that would be my primary focus, would be doing that.
So what I'm hearing in all of this is that we need to run out to the Gap and buy more chinos, because the owner of the A's owns, his family owns the Gap.
Well, we want to help him. He's an asshole.
Well, he's only spending money. Yeah, Fisher is an asshole.
Boycott chinos. You got to boycott the chinos.
So we're boycotting the chinos.
That's right.
I just want to make sure I'm on the right side of this. I want to make sure I'm on the right side of this, guys. Like, are we trying to keep the A's in Oakland, or are we trying to move like them to like Vegas and have like a good, like a great boys weekend?
I'd want
to
keep them.
And like,
I want to keep them. I don't need a baseball team in Vegas to go have a boys
weekend. Yeah, we could do March Madness for a boys weekend, or we could do
there's going to be a team in Vegas game or something. There's going to be a team in Vegas. Like, I think
there will. Yeah, there is. I mean,
like whether it's like the A's moving or it's an expansion team, you know, in 5 years, there's going to be a team in Vegas, I think.
So I know the big Cleveland thing right now is the Browns stadium and all that craziness. And I know he is not a Browns fan currently, and I respect his reasons for that, but you are a Guardians fan. And correct. I know the Guardians stadium is in great condition, but let's say they built a just super shitty, they didn't build a evergreen stadium like we got with Jacobs Field. Field, I think you can just keep enhancing it. What if they built just a shitty falling apart, like they can't play here in 2 years from now? You guys support a major tax levy for the, because you know Dolan's not going to pay a cent for a new stadium?
No.
Where are you on that?
I think I know where you're going with that. In fairness, though, when the Coliseum was turning 30 years old, 20, 30 years ago, no major renovations occurred. Because I've been following this Oakland situation pretty closely with a couple of YouTube channels with folks from the Bay Area. And by the way, I did not think we were going to be talking about this today. But I've been following that situation, and time and time again, no one's placing blame, but they're saying nothing was done at the time that it's the most key to renovate the stadium, probably 25, 30 years into the stadium, that life cycle, which the Guardians are addressing right now, currently.
Oh, no, the Guardians have done it the right way. I just meant if you had another Browns scenario. Correct. Oakland, unfortunately, fell into what happened with the Browns, where they had that dual purpose stadium that became super popular. You know,
it was a stadium in the 70s and 80s. Let's call it like it is.
At the time. But let's say, you know, let's say Guardian Stadium, it's just like, it's not the thing. They're like, we need a new stadium. Would you guys, and I know there's the law. I know there's the law in Ohio where it's like pretty impossible to move a team now. But let's say that didn't exist. Would you guys, like, how do you feel about that? Would you be okay with your taxes going up for where Dolan's like, I'm not committing a dollar to this. You all are paying for this, or I'm moving the team to Nashville.
The Guardians are the one team in the city of Cleveland that I would be okay with that. The one team.
Yeah, that's the only
one. The one and only team.
The only team. Yeah, that's the only team I'd be okay with it.
This is going to be an unpopular opinion, and Steve and I have had these conversations, and I don't want to speak for you, Steve, if you feel differently, but I think it's pretty safe to say that like our allegiances with teams in Cleveland area start with the Cleveland baseball team. Indians before, Guardians now, you know, it starts there.
Well, everything else is secondary. That's our number one, like, championship.
Everything is secondary. Yeah. Like, that parade to me Like, I will cry tears of joy when it happens. And I say when, not if, but like when. Because I do have,
I like that optimism.
We might be like 65, you know, 70 years old when it happens. But I have faith that it will happen, like, in our lifetime. Like, we will see a championship. It might be the fucking flukiest thing ever, but like, I'm remaining.
I don't care.
I'll take the damn championship.
I
will take the damn championship
for sure.
I mean, the Cavs could win 5 more championships in my lifetime before the Guardians even sniff one. And you know what? Like, the Guardians championship will still mean more to me than 2016 and you know, the hypothetical 5 more. You know, the Browns could get rid of the ownership.
The Browns would be the craziest.
The town would burn down, man. I would participate in that party probably. I would throw Molotov cocktails and
there would be like over 2 million people at that.
Like I would, sure. I would partake. I'm sure I would. You know, the Browns.
I think
the Browns one would be championship wild. Would be
so special, though.
Yes, that would be the most, because
you had, that was a team that provided like all this hope during like some of the darkest Cleveland sports times, because the Cavs were nothing, the Browns had moved, and so for 10 to 15 years, it was this like magical thing, this new stadium. It was like the pride of Cleveland. Like, they finally weren't a joke. And
there's something,
I think you would feel that in the air.
Yeah. There's something about a baseball season too. Not to take away from other sports, but there's something about a baseball season. The ups and downs, the everyday about it, that it just hits a little harder, I think. I'm just speaking for myself. But
yeah, you know, it's 6 months of the year, man. The season takes so freaking long.
Well, 7 when you factor in the playoffs. Like, it's taking up more than half of your year, you know?
Well, that makes it a lot more easy to stomach when that makes it a lot more easy to stomach when they start talking about, like, you know, the 3-pronged approach to what they did for Progressive, where some of it was taxpayer money in addition to the state and the city. You go, okay, well, yeah, I go to a lot of Guardians games, and I go, you know, and that's between April and October, and there's the occasional concert or whatever. But like, and I'm not naive enough to think that it's like, this is the way of the world. It's like, this is how they play ball if you want a sport, if you want a team in your city, like, I don't know what else to tell you, but the reality is that like the county and the city is going to have to pay up. And
it does provide a lot of jobs though, both the construction and just the daily operation and game day operation. And it helps businesses if you're downtown.
Imagine downtown Cleveland if they didn't have
Here's the other thing
just
too.
The casino. And, like, holy shit.
And I could be way off, but my understanding of the tax here in Cleveland, it's a little bit different. We don't want that.
Right.
But the tax in Cleveland it's the sin tax. And those who aren't familiar with it, you're taxed a higher rate on cigarettes and booze. It's very easy to not participate in that.
Right.
I live out of the county.
Yeah.
I don't live in Cuyahoga County. So, you know, I'm not taxed at a higher rate.
I subsidize our...
You help subsidize it, Steve. I help subsidize it in the fact that, like, when I'm buying, you know, I do buy alcohol within Cuyahoga County. You know,
he drives into Cuyahoga just to buy.
I drive into Cuyahoga County and I buy all my cigs, and then I take
the
them
entire
out
center
to
console is his ashtray. Just like,
and I take
hundreds
them out to the
suburbs.
I took them out to the suburbs and I sell them to the youth. That's how I roll. Okay, you know, if you can't have that, if you can't have me at my worst, then you can't have me at my best.
The nicotine is just coating just the leather interior.
He used to sell cigarettes to the Paul brothers out at Westlake.
The Paul brothers and the Kelsey brothers. Okay. So
yeah.
And MGK. and Kid Cudi. I'm just going to lump Andrew Carey and Halle Berry. And who am I missing? Am I missing anybody?
Tracy Chapman.
Tracy Chapman. Yes. Her cousins.
Tracy Chapman.
R.L. Stein.
R.L. Wes Craven. You were selling him to Wes Craven.
Wes Craven. Yeah. I was also selling him to Arsenio Hall and his crew.
Baby Steph Curry.
Baby Steph Curry. Tom Hanks when he was here at the Great Lakes Theater.
So like, don't tell me that I'm not a job creator. Yeah. Okay, guys. Like, I'm sick and tired of you guys coming at me on Twitter and what are you doing for the city, Chris? I've done my share. Okay. I might sound like I'm 12, but I'm actually 73.
Like, yeah.
He's Steve's grandfather, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how we got on.
My voice is very youthful.
Let's see.
All joking aside.
I don't know. In terms of other storylines going into the spring here.
There's
certainly the bullpen. There's the bullpen with Stefan and Karinchak being iffy.
Yeah.
But then you've also got, you know, the shortstop position that nobody seems to want.
Nobody at the wants moment. It at all.
It's crazy. Oh.
But that goes back to the point where you were mentioning, you know, like we can't, like, you know, we're joking about, you know, oh my gosh, Angel Martinez is having, you know, just tearing it up, and DeLauder's tearing it up, and this, that, and the next. That's all well and good. Don't get me wrong. There's something to put into those numbers, but I think in both DeLauder and Martinez's cases, even Manzardo, they need that extra time in AAA.
Here's the thing, actually, as you say that, Chris, because like I'm thinking to myself, like you were talking about, like, you know, you were talking about I don't even remember what you were talking about at this point, but we were talking about, like, we're, you know, you know, if Rocchio gets sent down in your notes, you know, if he goes back down, and I know that he's obviously on the 40 man, but like, I started thinking about like, okay, if let's say Jeff Passan's right and DeLauder does make the opening day, clearly he has to be added to the 40 man.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, Manzardo's not even on the 40 man at this point either. Yeah. So like, you've got your two guys. It's like, well, do you, like, is it one of those things where if DeLauder makes opening day right field, does that, like, do you cut or put on waivers Gabriel Arias? I mean,
I could see that.
Or do you send De Los Santos back to the Arizona and be like, forget it.
I could see a deal being worked out with Arizona though too. Like, hey, you want, you know what? We want to keep De Los Santos. We'll give you Jose Tania and somebody else for the rights. I can see that.
Being, you know, that'd be interesting.
I could see that being worked out just to get a little bit deeper look, because the guy's only 20 years old. You know, he hasn't played.
But also,
a
game, like, if you had to take
AAA.
No, and if you had to take your pick, I mean, yeah, you could try and work something out with Arizona, but like, if you were to just say, well, we're just going to open with DeLauder anyway. It's like, well, he becomes sort of a moot point. At least for now.
Well, I mean, I'll put it this way. It becomes
David more Fry's no longer it on becomes, I mean, David Fry is another casualty.
Dave Fry is another casualty, for sure. I think let's play this hypothetical out. I like that. If DeLauder is the opening day center fielder, you still have Florial, who you traded assets for, and you think there might be something there. Let's play that. You also have then Laureano and Will Brennan, and by all accounts, I think we can all agree, those two make a decent platoon. Is it the most ideal situation long term? God, no. But in the interim, certainly. So I think you could live with those five in the outfield to start the season and see if anybody rises. You know, you're not really.
It just doesn't make any sense. Anything. I mean, it doesn't really make it. It
would be difficult.
This is just like. This is just like. It's almost like I don't even know why Jeff Passan would throw it out there because I mean,
it's so against what they've ever done.
It's so against what they've ever done. It is 100%. You know, just like I think it's a fantasy land.
So happy.
100%. It would make me happy too, but I also think it's a fantasy land to think that. Anybody but Arias or Rocchio is going to win shortstop out of spring training too. And yeah, I would even argue too that it's Arias's job to lose. Let alone Rocchio quote unquote winning a job in spring training. There's things that I've seen Rocchio do. A lot of it was in Winter League. So take that for what it's worth. That I'm not sold on Arias, though. Now, I would love for Arias to hit 260 and 20 home runs. And
I mean, those things, this is not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to ever happen. I think his best season is going to be like 237 batting average with 16 home runs, you know, 180 strikeouts, 30 walks, you know, a dozen stolen bases, 20 doubles. That's the kind of season I see from him. Best case scenario. And I think you can get better from that from the other guys. I truthfully do. But
he's just a roster filler. I mean, nothing against the guy, but he's more or less just like a guy.
Yeah, he's a guy.
Yeah,
he's a guy. I still have hope.
And
for
you're waiting
Rocchio.
To say, it's your, well, you're either hoping for Rocchio or you say, you know, okay, well, sometime this year or into next, Juan Brito's up here, and then
and Juan Brito doesn't come with his, you know, he's not a guarantee either. There's holes in his game.
Yeah.
I think at some point, though, the front office really has to decide, what do we want? Do we want a guy who can hit 16, 17, 18 home runs in Arias, but he's going to hit 240? He's going to leave a lot to be desired. Do we want the guy who could hit maybe 280, 290 in Rocchio, but he's going to probably hit 10 to 12 home runs? Do we want the guy in Brito who could be a little bit of a combination of both?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we want Martinez, who's quite frankly an unknown? I don't know what to think of with him.
Well, they seem to like him enough to consider putting him in the outfield.
Yeah, I mean, they like his bat, and I think positional versatility only helps these guys in two facets: making the Guardians roster, but also upping their value in trades. That's the other thing we have to factor in, because and I'll write about this, and hopefully we might be able to link to this episode, but there's like 8 dudes fighting for 2 spots. And one of those 2 spots is kind of almost written in pen with Jimenez.
I mean, we talk about this every year, though. It's like, surely they're going to trade away some of these.
We have. We've been talking about this since
our podcast. They are never doing it.
We've talked about this since like day one of the podcast. But I truthfully believe that this is the year that we have to make a determination. Otherwise, we are.
I think it'll. Fucked. I think that that determination will come more in from trade like,
value.
I mean, I don't even think that's really what they're concerned with. Is like they'll just. I mean, they could just cut. It's just like, well, we'll just put Gabriel Arias on waivers, and like, it's but, not going to hurt. I mean, what does it matter?
Problem too. This philosophy of taking these like middle infielders, like in the international free agent period. Everybody else is doing the same thing. Look at all the international free agents. They're all middle infielders. We were ahead of the curve by a year or two, and we didn't do shit with those prospects. And now we're left holding the bag.
Well,
if I had to guess, we might get like a decent relief pitcher out of somebody or somebody's,
which they might need.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the guy like, you know, even like Jose Tania, I mean, he seems like a real odd man out in all of this, 100%. To be honest.
100%. I mean, if I were to put money on it, to me, it's Arias, Rocchio, or maybe Martinez now ends up with a middle infield job, probably paired with Jimenez.
Yeah, they've invested the money. Jimenez has one of those spots for at least the next 3 years.
Yeah, I think Jimenez is locked in. And my big goal this year is to figure out who's that double play partner for Jimenez.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of wins and winning the division, like that's the thing I want to see happen this year.
It's going to be cutthroat.
Yeah. And it kind of has to be, you know, And I hope they take the same approach in center field too, quite frankly. Like, you know, if Florial's not cutting it,
Henry,
move on to the next guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see Miles Straw out there, but move on to the next guy.
Yep. Like, you mean Jason Chorio?
I think his time is a little too early. He hasn't even played in Lake County, man. He hasn't even played in Lake County. I mean, I think you're talking at least 2 years down the road, but I think he could be the true
World Series in 78 years. Let's just go with like, other than Jose, let's do and Naylor. Let's do 22 and under
and go for broke. I mean,
let's try to be the youngest team in baseball every year, no matter what. Youngest team. All right. Well, real quick, because we're coming up on an hour, Chris. I know you want.
Yeah.
Let's save our extension predictions. Let's save them because that's a longer conversation.
Yeah.
I want to save
probably.
Those. But what I want to do is ask you one last question. Is sort of in the same vein. Would you? Right now, give Chase DeLauder like a Jackson Chorio type deal and lock him up for, you know, the decade. Would you go to him right now and be like, we're going to give you 10 years, whatever the hell.
Okay.
Because what was his deal was?
Yeah, it was like 10 years, like 80 some million or something like that.
It was eight years,
82 million.
Yep.
8 years. With escalators, 82.
I could take it to 142.
Okay. But Chorio is like probably going to. He's
18. He's. Or 19.
I thought he was 20.
I got it.
19. DeLauder's 22.
42, and he apparently is an insurance salesman. I might have the wrong one.
I think you had the wrong. I think you had the wrong chair.
Why did they pay this guy so much?
Oh my gosh,
that's a
terrible
error.
Investment.
Yeah.
Birth certificates got mixed up someplace. Well, I think Chorio is like on the doorstep. Right, where was he last year?
He's going to start the season with them.
Yeah, so they have like 10 years. Oh gosh. This might be a better question for next offseason because let me say this. my initial reaction is yes, lock him up for, you know, $120 million over 10 years.
Which like could be the most affordable freaking deal.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah.
Because, ever. because I say that with like the caveat of like, make it like 11 years, $120 million, because I don't think he's ready this year. And he's had an injury history. He's only played 6 games at AA. I think he starts the year in Akron. I think they're aggressive with him. And I think there's a good chance that we see him by like September. But I don't know how much we see him. I think it might be like a Bo Naylor type situation where it's like, yeah, he got called up. What, last, like the 2022 season, Bo Naylor got called up and like played like, mm-hmm. like had 8 at bats. Like, I could see that for Chase this mm-hmm. year. So like, yeah, like an 11-year deal, like $120 million, 100%. Because his game reminds me of a former Indian. Maybe not as prolific, but like similar style in Grady Sizemore. And if he can become 75%, 80% of Grady Sizemore, that's a steal.
Think about
ideally without the
think injuries. About DeLauder. I mean, DeLauder does have that nice tight swing, a lot like Sizemore. And also he profiles like a corner outfielder, because I did not realize profile
a little bit more corner outfield. Yeah, 100% give you that.
I did not realize how big of a dude he is.
Dude, he is a mountain.
He's 6'4".
He's a mountain. I took my son to like one of his final games in Lake County last year. He was out in left field. Parker Messick was on the mound, and Messick is a beast of a human too. He's only like 6'1". But he was like pitching at like 245. Like those two guys, I'm like, I'm watching that game and I'm like, there's two fucking tight ends out there
mm-hmm.
playing this game. And I was like,
they did that series where Austin Hedges was interviewing like the players as a joke. They did Chase DeLauder and he just looked massive.
Dude, he's like 6'4".
Compared to like Hedges. It was
crazy.
He's
like 6'4", like 240, I saw.
Huge.
He's a big dude. Yep. He's a big, big dude. Yeah. And like, but all the scouting reports I keep seeing is like, he's a center fielder. And I was like, what world?
I mean, the good thing is you don't need him to be, because Kwan can be your center fielder. Like, there's that
world, yeah. And I know, like, I've argued against moving Kwan out of left field, but like, I think that's the guy I would be like, okay, let's move Kwan to center. Kwan's probably going to be a damn good center fielder. Maybe not Gold Glove caliber, but damn good.
Yeah, I would extend him too. Like, I don't know. Like, there's obviously no can't miss, and weird things happen. But in terms of what we've had coming up the last, you know, 10 years, he looks pretty phenomenal, and he's hit at every level.
Yeah.
Dude, I think if he like legitimately was your right fielder this year, I think conservatively he would hit 240, like worst case, in 16 to 18 home runs, but probably exceed that and be in the running for rookie of the year.
That's interesting. I haven't given that much thought.
Like I can't disagree with you,
Fabs.
So aggressive, but like, and I know they're not going to do this, and I know you want to have control, and I know you want to work out other guys, but I've just been like so sick of us trading away the wrong guys, us watching all these guys we thought were going to turn into like great prospects just lose all of their value. I want the guys now. I don't want to lose more years of Jose. I don't want to lose a year of Naylor if we're not going to re-sign Naylor. Like, I just want to go for it. So, like, that's why I'm just so in the, fuck it, put him in right field. I don't care. He's probably better than what we have there right now.
Yeah, most likely.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah. I mean, I just like, I love that trend that a lot of teams are clearly seeing the value of trying to lock up. Cause like, if you locked up Chase DeLauder for 11 years, he'd be 33.
Yeah.
So it's like, see ya. I mean, like,
yeah, that would be great. I think he definitely gets some time in Akron, but now that you mention it, like, going stereotypical Cleveland route, like, he's going to get, like, you know, 40 games in Columbus, you know, minimum 40, 50, 60 games in Columbus, right? So, like, maybe the September call-up is where he comes up. But then again, you know, I don't know, maybe with Vogt now, you know, maybe we rolled the dice, and maybe it's a, you know, maybe
there, instead there of a September call-up,
He's post All-Star game.
There were some teams last year that brought up a couple double A guys. I know Nolan Shanwell was one.
He comes to mind.
There was one other one with, like, I think maybe the Padres or something. But like,
Tampa brought up Tampa brought up our old friend Caminero.
Oh, Caminero
for like a dozen games.
I can't.
Speaking of,
MVP in a year.
But it all equals out because, you know, as long as maybe the other thing we do, and I say this jokingly, but also kind of not jokingly, and this, I feel terrible saying, even bringing this thought in, maybe we do a background check on DeLauder, make sure he's not dating 16-year-old girls too.
Before we give him an extension. I know.
Like, maybe we just do that. I mean, like, maybe we just try that out, you know, for size.
Hey, look, you know, the Rays are going to get their money back. So, and that'll 100%. Just go to Junior Caminero.
Probably.
Like, well,
meanwhile, Tobias Myers, where are you?
I can't even. That one hurts. That one hurts that so one, much. That one just, I can't, like, even. Just, I don't, like, even want to talk about soul. It.
Yeah. Yeah. So we should probably just end there.
Yeah, that might be the place to end here, because I don't know if I can go down that rabbit hole today.
Not especially an outfield of Caminero, DeLauder, Kwan.
Maybe throw Nolan Jones in there.
Nolan Jones.
Oh, just, gosh. So an embarrassment, like, of
riches. I need a center fielder. What about Will Benson? It's an
embarrassment of riches.
Boys. That's back when you had like Brian Giles and Richie Sexton as like your bench outfielders. Where you're just like, okay.
Oh, oy.
God.
Oy. Yeah, let's end there.
Oh, boy. Yeah, let's end there. All right. Well, hey, look, you know, I think it's been a pretty fairly promising start to the spring. We'll see how things progress. But, you know, things are looking okay. See what happens in another week. But I'll take it. And until then, you know what to do. You can catch us at A Way Back Gone. Chris and I have been writing some stuff there. And then you can catch us on social at Calpino Pod and all sorts of fun stuff going on there. And we got some over-unders for you coming up, boys and girls.
That's a very fun episode.
2024 edition is coming up.
If you missed last year's episode, I think it was... I don't want to speak for everybody, but it was one of our more lively episodes.
Maybe my favorite.
And collectively it's our most fun, carefree episode, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's full of hope too that usually gets shattered by June.
Optimism runs wild.
When we revisit
Oh boy. Actually, you know,
we're 110 win team.
I might put the recap end of season video as my favorite, just eating crow. How drunk on the season were we before it even started?
Yeah, I won't make that same mistake again.
I mean, we aren't coming off a divisional round appearance from my
perspective. Well, that's true. So. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to be a little more hardened and cynical this year. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. We're a little battle hardened.
Yeah.
All right. We'll catch you guys later.